Since Sarah, having served on the Public Safety Subcommittee of Ways and Means last time when we were doing DOC budgets, and the one thing they were kind of ramping back on was their sexual offenders program because they weren't being successful. And I guess I'm not saying that there is a program, to my knowledge, that is successful, but that doesn't preclude a program from being developed in the future that would be successful. And so if indeed we do find a way to cure these people, they need to have an opt-out. And so that was why that language was put in there.
Thank you very much, Representative Cruz. Appreciate your coming this morning. Mr. Taylor, could you come back up, please? Mr. Taylor, just a couple of questions. First of all, it appears that you do not need statutory authorization to implement any of these restrictions which are in the bill as stated at present. Chairman, that's correct. Assuming for purposes of argument that the committee decides that it does not need to implement this legislation, are there other statutory changes that are needed under the relating clause of relating to sex offenders? Maybe you'd want to go back and think about that.
Chairman, I'd certainly like to go back and think about it. I would say that we have a number of bills, both in the House and the Senate, that are trying to address our registration, our supervision, the length of incarceration of differing sex offenses. So there are a variety of those bills coming through the system that each generate a discussion about their merits. So we have a variety of...
Well, if any of those bills gets caught in the sinks of the system somewhere, please let us know. And if anything else comes up that kind of fell off the prioritization list about requested legislation, I think I wrote to Director Cook just saying we'd welcome hearing about anything that might need to be done to improve the process, and that'll be a request to you if there's anything that hasn't been presented for this session, that this is sort of our last shot at any fix-ups that might be needed.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen has a question.
Just a comment. Representative Schrader's bill that involved the medications, I think, is still somewhere around.
Well, in fact, he's apparently been surveying members of the committee. Mm-hmm. So,
Mr. Chair, we need that bill. We need the castration form in that bill, too. People are lucky that we let them keep living.
Well, Representative Schrader visited with me late yesterday and advised me that he'd been visiting with members of the committee. I anticipate, based on his survey, that we'll do a work session on that bill next week.
This bill, I'm not real excited about micromanaging how the parole officers supervise the people, but by the same token, I'd like to give them a full menu of services and programs that they can use and the tools to supervise. And I think there may be some tools in here that are valuable and would be helpful. But I think it needs to be tailored by the parole officer in terms of what does each individual inmate need the most in order to keep out of trouble.
Mr. Taylor, you, no play on words here, but since you're the tailor, you get the tailor. We'd be curious as to whether or not that was a play on words. I apologize. If you find that there's some case law out there that has hemmed in some of the discretion that's needed, perhaps you could double check on that to make sure that there wasn't something out there that would require some statutory clarification. I share Representative Brzezinski's caution about writing all of this stuff into the statutes, but if you found that there was some case out there where there's some interpretation that something really needed statutory authority, we sure would want to hear about that.
Chairman Mannix, I will also survey the network just to make sure, but I believe that our management of sex offenders is, as we've testified before, one of the national models, and our people are, we just have another 50 going to a specialized training again. And we really try and search for every kind of monitoring and management and tight supervision of this population we can have. So if we find anything that we say, this would really free us we'll certainly be back. We know that we've worked recently on some bills to make sure we have the ability to notify people and do some different things that
use other access. Has a question on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Taylor, has there been any treatment programs of late that are showing promise for success that you've been made aware of? Or
Chairman Mannix, Representative Sinceri, we have a couple programs, and whenever we say the word success, I think we have some success with a variety of sex offenders. Sex offenders are quite a long continuum of what motivates them, what their mental condition is, and how it changes or doesn't change. We have some programs. We have a very exciting program that now is being nationally publicized out of Jackson County that included the management, monitoring, polygraphs, and ongoing treatment. Almost all of our sex offenders receive both polygraph and treatment. And that program showed a very low recidivism rate. And of the populations we manage in Oregon, while we have them under supervision, this is, I think, our lowest population of recidivators. And the crimes they recidivate for, actually less than half of those are new sex offenses. So we feel with this population, we also have some people that we all consider very dangerous, very difficult to manage, and those are the people we put most of our energy into trying to, and we have some, there's some legislation in this session to try other ways of responding to them. But I think we have some good programs going on, and most of them entail that tight monitoring and the treatment and the connection with the treatment provider and the PO during the period of supervision. And now we have these folks under supervision, a number of these folks, for quite a long time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Taylor. Appreciate you coming back up. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on House Bill 2729? Seeing that there is no one else, the public hearing on that bill is concluded. We'll move into public hearing on House Bill 3598, and I'll ask counsel to summarize the measure.
Mr. Chairman, I won't go into too much detail at this point because the bill is the same as the Dash 1 amendments to 2297, and if I were to go into detail, it would be a very lengthy process. As far as I can see, there are not any differences between the Dash 1 amendments, which have already been explained to the committee.
Very well. With the sponsors of the bill, I don't know why you need any explanation. The committee ought to just stand by.
Mr. Chairman, the one thing I would mention, if I could, is that I did receive some comments from an assistant attorney general regarding some technical language regarding the public corporation part of the bill, and I'm in the process of requesting those amendments back from LC.
Do we have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means from the speaker on this?
Yes, we do, Mr. Chairman.
I'm not surprised. What we'll do is we'll hear from folks about the bill and see where we're going with this. Ultimately, this will end up in the Ways and Means as a Ways and Means decision, but they would want to hear from us substantively, and that is if we send it to them, we're recommending that this approach be followed. I don't see Ann Christian signed up. All right. She's just here to watch. So is Kingsley Click. All right, I see Jim Rice signed up. Mr. Rice, come on up. And Mr. Potter is coming up, too. Good morning. Welcome to the committee again.
Good morning, Chairman Mannix, members of the committee. Jim Rice, lobbyist for Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers. I signed up on this bill neutral for some thoughts here. What got me thinking about this issue of a commission was when I went to Lane County, there's a guy named Fred Hugan. He is the toughest DA I had ever met, certainly. Carried a couple of different guns into the courtroom with him, cleaned his knife with a giant, his nails with a giant knife during trials. And Fred retired, and I thought, you know, he's not much older than I am. And then some other folks started retiring his age, and I looked around the courtroom and I said, the judge is in PERS, the DA is in PERS, the court reporter is in PERS, the sheriff guarding my client is in PERS, and you know, I'm not. How'd that happen? I'm part of the criminal justice system here as much as anyone. And I started thinking about myself for a moment, so it's a bad move. and thinking maybe I should be part of this greater system and being taken care of more by the government than being in the private sector. And what I started doing was looking at commissions, and there are many, many states who have a commission of some sort. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea, nor is it necessarily a good idea. However, I tend to think that creating, as a personal philosophy, creating another level of bureaucracy in government is generally a bad idea. Is this going to cost more money? Is another issue. I think it does generally when we have commissions like this. It's not necessarily so, but often it does. And those are two things I think when we're trying to serve the public, as lawyers do and as legislators do, we should look at, is the public really getting more for their money? I don't know the answer to that question. It's not an easy question to answer. I went to Washington a while ago and talked and listened to different states. There was a couple of different approaches that they work on these from. My suggestion has been for a while that it's an idea that may have merit, but we need to look into it in a really efficient manner. And that would cost, actually, I think, quite a bit of money. We'd have to have someone on a fiscal side look at, does this save money in other states? Does it provide for better services? If it provides for better services, is it really worth the extra cost that it's going to be to the state in employing this kind of setup? I sort of fun like to call it like having a defender general as opposed to the attorney general. And it might be a good idea, but I think it's the kind of issue, it's a path we shouldn't go down without knowing more about it. And I have tried to study this issue, and it is complex. When I looked at this particular bill, just a few comments, there would be seven directors, only two of which would be lawyers. I don't know who regulates other doctors or real estate people, but I'd hate to have a real estate board and only have two realtors on it and have everybody else coming from some other place, because life is so complicated, it's difficult to understand the complexities of any field without having a significant number of professionals in that field. It's good to have outside voices, because outsiders can add clarity. I was talking about this the other day when we were working on a bill, and one of the members of this committee came up with some very clarifying language, and it solved a problem. So there's nothing wrong with having people who are not lawyers, but I think the numbers there present a problem to me. As we get into the bill, too, we look at some of the rules superseding the rules of court. I look at that part of the bill and say that looks like perhaps an infringement on the judiciary, and I think there's potentially constitutional problems with that. I did like the part of the bill where the corporation could accept gifts, and I can only imagine the people lining up to donate to indigent defense. Some other provisions I've noticed in here. There's a provision that the legal representation of a public defender, actually people there, it seems to me, could serve to defend people if the public defenders are sued, and they are sued. I have both sued lawyers and represented lawyers who've been sued, and the adage of the lawyer who represents himself as a fool for a client really is true. And I think that having distance in law is important, and not having the people who are directly involved as defendants, because when people are sued, even lawyers who are used to lawsuits, they tend to lose their perspective, and they tend to be easier to sue when that issue crops up. Lastly, in Section 6, the PERS, having some people in PERS and some people not in PERS. I don't do employment law, but the equal protection of the law concept there seems to be a potential problem that I have not investigated that I think could only lead to greater problems. So,
Mr. Rice, I need to interrupt you on that one. I mean, it's pretty clear that there's a specific group of people who are currently under PERS who would move over to this new corporation, and this is designed to protect their PERS status. I think that there's a rational basis to say they may stay in the PERS system, whereas the rest of this public corporation is not operating under PERS. It's supposed to set up retirement plans. Mm-hmm. It might even be better than PERS.
And it could be, and I only look toward other government lawyers. The attorney generals are unionized. The district attorneys are all, you know, exactly. And I raised this. I don't have answers to these things. I just saw that there, and I see now the government contracting and privatizing this matter, and for example, contracting with the Lane County Public Defender, which is a nonprofit corporation, and generally, this bill is sort of swimming against the tide of modern legislation. Many people are looking to privatize matters, not increase government. And I'm not sure where this bill goes, but I think that it's an interesting idea, and I'm not opposed to it, but I think it really would take some significant study and money, actually, to figure out, is this a prudent step to take for the people of the state of Oregon?
Mr. Rice, I need to mention, too, we already have a privatized public defender system other than the appeals. The only question is whether or not, because you contract out. Ann Christian is shaking her head back there, but we contract out. We have 94 contracts mm-hmm. out there
right.
where private attorneys provide public defender services. They are not employees of the state.
Correct, and I sort of see this bill as going the other way and embracing them into one big collective group. When I look at education, it makes some sense to me that different parts of the state and different people in the state have different needs in education, and we sort of try and tailor it to the county or the situation we're dealing with. And when I look at bringing everybody into one big package, I think in other parts of the world, that's not such a good idea, and it's better to disseminate and let, at a local level, perhaps what's good for Lane County may not be good for Portland or may not be good for Umatilla County.
My understanding, Mr. Rice, of the way this bill is written, that the Public Defender Corporation or Public Defense Services Corporation is simply put in the position of being able to continue those contracts, renew them, when they come up for renewal, negotiate them, make whatever determination as to what works best, and it can still have 94 contracts or whatever there is out there. It's just that you have a different entity doing it, and you don't have the judges approving investigations. It all goes through the contract process, but at least that's the way I read the proposal. But maybe I'm not seeing something that's there.
Chairman Mannix, I think that there are some things we could take away from the judges. Maybe do it. People doing it who aren't paid as much as judges, for example, in terms of looking at the expenses that are involved. And I think the judges would be very happy with that. They see some conflict of interest situations, and I'm cognizant of their concerns, and I think their concerns sometimes are real and should be dealt with. But it might be much simpler to take those concerns that the judges have. Judge Leonard, who's testified here, wrote me a letter and presented those concerns. And that particular part of it could either be, I think, immediately transferred over to the State Public Defender's Office and have them do it, or perhaps someone in the State Court Administrator's Office could step out of their immediate supervision of the judges and do that on their own. Whether the judges are so busy that that's a good idea is another policy issue that I really want to address.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Potter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Potter. I'm the director of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association and have been for 20 years. My educational background is public administration. I'm not a lawyer. I will say that in the last 20 years, I've learned a considerable amount about the law from lawyers, and this morning I've just learned a new definition of neutral.
He's fired.
We are opposed to the bill, though not to all the concepts. We're not opposed to having a commission. In fact, having a commission we think is a good idea. Having a commission added to the current structure would be a good element to add to the current indigent defense system. It would be a good idea to add additional staff to the current system to provide better coverage, better supervision, and better quality control. But I'm not sure that it's a good idea to throw away the current system, which has been tweaked over the last 20 years that I've been around through numerous studies, and I know, Chairman Mannix, you have participated in a number of those studies. We tried an experiment in 1985 that we certainly don't want to visit again, and the circumstances are now different, but we set up a commission in 85 that was a dismal failure, and the court took engine defense back. Setting up this kind of a public corporation will be more expensive than the current system, in large measure because right now the current system actually benefits from the use of court personnel that are already in existence that would now be pulled out from court personnel, though this bill only talks about those personnel that are exclusively involved in the purposes and duties of this act. And there's lots of court personnel out there that do partial FTE work in the administration and the duties that this act covers. Having separate offices and separate staff and separate counsel that is now provided for in part by the state court administrator's office is going to cost more money. So this will be a more expensive proposition. I can almost guarantee that. From our self-interest point of view, and certainly one of the arguments we've made in Ways and Means, is that having a separate commission divorced from the judicial department, whether it's a public corporation or a house and executive, has a negative impact on our ability to secure funds for engine defense. The orphaning engine defense concept is of considerable concern to those that are providing defense services. Separating out engine defense removes us from the Chief Justice and the State Court Administrator and their budget, which has credibility and standing. And there is considerable concern that when you separate that out and let it float by itself, we're going to lose some of that clout, standing, and credibility. Having read through the bill last night and highlighting things, in looking at Jim's highlighted pages, I noticed we highlight many of the same kinds of things, and he's raised many of those as well. I haven't gone through and looked at all the ORS chapters that there's a section in the bill that says that a variety of ORS chapters do not apply to the corporation, and a variety of chapters do, and I haven't checked out all those. But in essence, it's going to be more expensive, and it'll weaken the position of engine defense to get funding.
Thank you. If you would like to, if you wanted to submit some comments, anything, any supplemental comments about specific provisions, we'd welcome those too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I guess for the panel and from what I'm hearing, it sounds to me that the concept is a good one if it can be worked and have time to, let's say, really have the debate and work out whatever problems may have occurred from 85's attempt and whatever. Do you think it would be better for us to move forward by asking for an interim group that would be specifically and solely on this issue so it wouldn't get diluted with other materials and then be able to come back with the next legislative session with a plan that has actually been worked and reworked for potential problems instead of ending up with some type of result that happened like in 85?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pozanski, and I hope I have some police cover behind me because saying yes to that will cause a barrage of not another study and bricks being thrown at my head. But the answer is yes. What we've done in the past in the various studies that we have done have focused on how to ensure quality, but we've never done a study that actually comes up with a business plan that says if we change the system, how would we actually implement that and what are all the unforeseen consequences that need to be examined and cost analyzed before we make a decision to move to something else. So the answer is yes, and it has to be a well-structured study. And just saying that, though, you can't delude yourself into thinking the study is going to be free because a study will cost money, too, especially if it's done right.
Sure. I guess the reason I bring this up because if we went with some type of concept like this, it would be such an overhaul of the system. It wouldn't be something that you could just say it starts and it's going to take care of itself. It's basically one day we're under one system, the next day we've got to be into the next system, or we're going to have some type of transition. And that's my biggest concern as to the havoc that we may cause, which could, in fact, increase not only the cost of providing the services, but also to the criminal justice system of whether the representation was appropriate, whether or not victims' rights were about that process. So that's why it would seem that if we're going to take this leap and basically divorce what is the current system, that we make certain that everything has been evaluated to the point of when we make the change, it happens, and we know that it's ready to go in place.
If I could address that, Representative Przanski and Chairman Mannix, I sort of thought about the mechanics of this thing. Okay, like, where's this place going to be housed? I've been to the State Public Defender's Office, for example. That's too small. So we've got to, like, find a facility. We've got to find the employees who are going to work in that. Would people from the state court administrators, for example, there's a section that, you know, gets moved over. I, as a lawyer, am not capable of making those kinds of financial plans or whatever, so I assume it would take, like, an analyst or an accountant or whoever does this and sit down and go, here are the attending costs, just like you would a business plan for a business. We're going to venture into a new area. A corporation would do a plan. They'd have a financial side. They'd have the administrative side. All of the, they'd have to break leases places for at the state public defenders. I think they just signed a lease over there. How much is that going to cost? And putting all those pieces together so someone could sit down and say, this is the true cost of this bill, I see as a real project and would have to employ people of some talent and merit, unless, for example, we could find, there might be some retired lawyers who might say, I'm willing to devote some time to help out, but even if we got people like that, we'd have to have administrative people and cost analysts to come back and say, this is what this implementation would entail.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
This isn't rocket science. And the things you've thrown up as objections here, I don't see as things that couldn't be worked out fairly easily with the right people brought to the table.
Chairman Mannix, Representative Simmons, you're right. I don't think it's rocket science at all. This isn't difficult, but it's like I look at this as a business. It's a good model. I think people in private enterprise have got it pretty well honed down. So if a business said, we're going to enter into a new field and we're going to restructure, for example, they plan all that stuff out, but they do have cost analysts. There's the talent side and the bean counters is how I look at them. And the talent people come up and go, hey, this is a good idea. But the bean counters come in and then tell the businessmen, this is what it's going to entail doing, and here's a plan for doing it. And I'm not against doing that. I don't mean to say these are obstacles. What I'm saying is I think we should be thoughtful if we do it, just so we know what we're doing.
Sir, we have our bean counters down on Ways and Means. I think we're quite capable of getting to the details.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask Kingsley Click to come up. Perhaps she could offer some comments for us. She's the State Court Administrator. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you. For the record, Kingsley Click, State Court Administrator. I had not signed up previously to testify, not because we're not very interested in this bill, but the Executive Committee of the Judicial Conference was just mailed copies the end of last week, and so I was not able yet to report a formal position. I think, as some members may be aware, the Judicial Conference requested a bill, Senate Bill 66, be introduced that set up a Public Defense Commission. So in most ways, Senate Bill 66 and this bill are headed to the same goal, which is to put together a commission or a corporation that addresses the provision of legal services in the mandated case areas as a separate entity. And I think both are goal-oriented to setting it up in a very business-like fashion. Where the department has not had an opportunity to look is the advantages and disadvantages of a nonprofit corporation type of status versus a commission, which is separate but still a little more connected to the branch. So with that, we're happy to work with anyone on this issue. I think the cost issues will be there depending on how you transition. I think looking at the tax magistrate and the Department of Revenue in that transition, there was some overlap and one-time setup costs, which are more than the current system, but you look towards the long term and where is it going to be better off for the long term. So with that, if there are any questions, I can come back.
My perception is the tax court magistrate's division has been a wonderful success.
Chair Mannix, it has. Could need had more implementation time, but it's a success. Thank
also
you.
Also needs a little more funding, but that's an issue we'll take care
yes.
of that on the safety. Well, we kind of, for a new operation, we kind of shaved it a little bit too thin. But from all I've seen, they're doing a real good job. Kudos to them and to the court administrator's office for that work. That doesn't mean because something else worked that this would work. I recognize that. We're talking totally different concepts. But I do remember how the Department of Revenue fought so hard initially against the Tax Court Magistrates Division. They finally were brought around. All right. Any questions for Ms. Click? We'll probably come back next week on this. Do you think by then you'd have some chance to get some further feedback?
Chair Mannix, yes, I will.
And since we won't have the final say, there'll be an opportunity to work over some other things, too, and see what the alternatives are with the Senate bill and the like. Representative Przanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess from your perspective of being an administrator, it would help me to know exactly what you think would be an appropriate plan for implementing this type of overhaul and change. I mean, from what I'm hearing is it can be successful, and I think it would be great to get it out from underneath the judiciary. But at the same time, looking at the global impact that it's going to have on the system, if we don't do it right, we're going to either have another snafu, kind of the DMV computer problem, that's going to have much more ramifications because of the civil liberty issues that we're going to be faced with and potentially find the state in greater litigation. So if you could bring some of that stuff back, too, I think that would be appropriate.
Chair Mannix, Representative Przanski, I agree with you completely, and I think we have a very vested interest in it being successful and being done in a way that doesn't jeopardize the stability that's been brought to the system in the last 10 years and ensuring kind of quality for the future years. So that's a very important piece.
Thank you very much. All right. Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 3598? Seeing no one else, this concludes the public hearing on House Bill 3598. And we will move into a discussion work session on House Bill 2394. Council, where are we on this bill?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this has sort of been the bill from hell. We had the Dash 8 amendments, and what the committee had requested, I thought, was a bill that really comprehensively integrated various amendments that were before the committee. The committee may recall this is a bill which provides that if a person commits felony attempt to elude or duly in specified circumstances and somebody dies as a result of that, that constitutes murder as opposed to what it would normally be, which is normally manslaughter one, manslaughter two, or criminally negligent homicide. And these amendments have been brought back. They're the Dash 8 amendments. Before I go into any detail on what they do, I guess what I really need to know is I know that there is a little bit of discomfort with the bill. Does the committee want to proceed with this bill or not? My understanding and my impression had been that the committee wanted to further consider it, but maybe I was incorrect on that number.
2394, which incorporates 2534 and 2303, as I recall.
The 2303 amendments, as we left it last time, are not incorporated into the Dash 8 amendments. That had to do with unauthorized departure, and with all the different amendments, it got too confusing. We have not taken care of it yet, Mr. Chairman, but we had talked about putting it into another relating to crime bill.
All right. Well, let's make note then that we want to watch that unauthorized departure issue and see if we have another vehicle for that. So we basically have 2534 in here. What else do we have in here? In terms of parentage of bills.
It is 2534, basically. And the reason we had to use the Related to Crime Bill is because 2534 only had to do with the felony murder statute, but with 2394, we can also incorporate, or the committee could incorporate if it wanted to, provisions that say that if a person doesn't die, but if they incur serious physical injury as a result of the felony, lewd, or Dewey situation, that constitutes assault one. Alternatively, if it's physical injury, not serious physical injury, that is assault two.
All right. Representative Brzezinski.
Mr. Chair, counsel brought this to my attention yesterday and asked me to kind of review it to see where I was at on some of the stuff. And I did that last night. And I guess I do have some concerns because when you look at all the areas that we're looking at in basically expanding definitions of murder as well as assault one and assault two, it seems like we're going to be holding people that are in different situations to the same standard. And what I mean by that is that throughout all of these, if someone has been convicted of the crime, that's one thing. But if they haven't been convicted and they are put into, like, on the DUII, into a diversion program, or if they, for whatever reason, has failed to appear, there's no distinction as to what they would be charged with as compared to someone that's actually been through the due process of being convicted of that same crime. And it seems to me that there's a disparity to hold someone accountable for subsequent conduct where they have not actually been convicted of the crime as some of the proposals put forward. I think the other thing that concerned me as well is that this could also impact, well, it would impact a very broad net of people because there's no statute of limitation as to when any of these would apply. In other words, in my court, I see people that have been alcoholics for, well, a number of years, decades actually, and in some cases they may have a conviction for DUI back in 72, 80, or something like that, where, and then at that point their record is basically clean with no indication of any type of criminal conduct and little to any traffic infraction involvement with the law, and then all of a sudden they've slipped off the wagon or they get caught again, whatever it is, for DUI. These provisions that provide it for DUII would, in fact, include those individuals. And we've had discussions in this committee of trying to hone in and make certain that we stay with some type of standard where we're not just casting a net out and anyone that may be through the system, what we've been using is about 10 years, isn't going to be caught up in this net. So those are some issues that I still see as problems as to having some type of consistency. And then I guess the lastly would be the sanctions that the individuals would be facing would be minimum mandatory sentences where today as a manslaughter or that's how they would be prosecuted today under current law. They could in fact be looking at a felony murder charge, which would increase the sentence from 5 years, 10 months, or 10 years, up all the way up to 25 years. It just seems to me that we may want to have some discussion, or if we're going to continue to pursue this, to make certain that we're casting the net that we really want to, because the other part is if we have it this broad, it probably is the poison pill, just because of the cost to the system of being able to absorb these individuals, I would think would be extremely high.
All right, thank you. We just got these amendments yesterday. I'd encourage members who we will have three options on this. One is to change the, we have the original bill, we have eight versions of amendments, although the dash eight seems to be the culmination of time. And what I'd encourage members to do is look at whether or not they want an alternative to the bill or an alternative to the dash eight, or whether they want the dash 8. And since we just got these yesterday, I'll give everyone some time to review these, and we'll schedule a further work session next week. And so we'll go out of the work session on House Bill 2394. Colleagues, a couple of things about next week. Next week will be work session week. We're going to see a bunch of hearings the next couple of days. I'm going to try to expedite those hearings. Some will be good, some will be bad, some will be indifferent, but I'm going to try to expedite them.
after that, I have to shuffle through. We have 1 week of work sessions. If there's any bill that's been pending, that's been heard, that you haven't seen a work session on, you're concerned about, feel free to check with me or Mr. Horton in particular, because I'm going to try to schedule a lot of work sessions next week. I'm going to have Mr. Horton schedule anything we schedule for a work session on Monday. I'm going to have it also scheduled for Tuesday, or maybe we'll skip over to Wednesday. I have 2 days of work sessions set for each item. So, in fact, that's probably the best thing. The Mondays are also set for Wednesdays. The Tuesdays are also set for Thursday, et cetera, et cetera. And so that whatever bills come up, we'll have 2 days. And if something, a glitch comes up, we'll have time to say, well, we can still bring it back with proper notice.
Mr. Chair, since you said those 4 days, I assume we'd also be meeting on Friday, the 30th, since it's the last one, so that would give us that ability to do the catch-all. I would only recommend that maybe whatever we set over from Tuesday to Thursday, we have that on the Friday schedule, just in case something happens. And, of course, the Wednesday could already be set with the 36-hour. That way we won't be caught with not being able to move forward.
Sure. Good idea. So that's what we'll do. And a couple of other things. Representative Frzanski and I have had a number of conversations. I've not been able to update all of you about Measure 7, the Majority and Minority Reports. Much has transpired since yesterday. And Representative Frzanski will be talking to the Democratic caucus about this. The Speaker will ask for unanimous consent to return the Majority and Minority Reports to the committee. We believe there will be unanimous consent. Those will come back to the committee. I have received permission from the Speaker to have a separate bill draft prepared as to each of the amendments. And we will split off the amendments so that the search and seizure issue is separate. Starting off, the first issue of splitting off has to do with what I'll call the traditional victims' rights versus pretrial detention, that will be separate. We also had the question of the composition of the jury as opposed to the right to demand a jury trial, that those would be separate concepts. I think those are the two split-off issues. But the other point is that each of the amendments will be presented in a separate resolution. I've received permission from the Speaker to have drafts of those prepared. They will be brought to this committee for introduction as committee bills. That's the way the process works at this point. We have the permission of the Speaker to do that. I'm going to ask Council to put on the notice for Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday possible introduction of bills depending on when they're ready, we can bring them to the committee. They will then be set for hearing with the Speaker's permission and to take a look at each of the issues and see where we want to go on each of those amendments. But they will each be in a separate resolution. I've spoken to Senator Bryan on the Senate side, and he is comfortable with that process and is comfortable with looking at any resolutions that come over as individual resolutions.
Mr. Chairman, if I could inquire briefly for the bill having to do with ballot titles, will we also need separate bills for that?
No, you can have one bill with ballot titles, but we'll have to hold that bill and modify it depending on what transpires.
Certainly.
We've already set, the special election bill has been sent to Ways and Means for a November special election, but that bill will sit there until all substantive bills having to do with November special elections are done, and then it'll be amended in Ways and Means to incorporate that.
Mr. Chair, just as to Council's concern about the bill from hell and 8 amendments, charter schools have 78 amendments.
And I would say I passed Representative Simmons a note that I received from my staff informing me that after I said the bill from hell, that the phone lines and judiciary office lit up with concerned citizens about the values of your committee counsel using words like that. It was a joke, I believe. So.
Well, sometimes I guess we just... Well, I won't.
I'm sure it was a joke, Mr. Chairman.
All right. There being no further business, we are adjourned.